Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fucking ears? What the fucking Americans? Yay, 4th of July. This is it. This is it. I hope you could afford to park some tanks around your house this year. That seems to be the thing to do. Not quite a parade, but you know, just park a few tanks around, or if you've got a truck or a Humvee. You know, just something that looks, you know, slightly militaristic or you know, daunting, intimidating, spectacular in the kind of armament type of way. Don't be afraid to put it out in the yard this year, because that seems to be the theme established by the man in the house. And yeah, just park them. You can't drive them around because they'll just destroy the streets. But you can have them towed in. And just left around, kind of like a half-assed military trade show of some sort. And yeah, you could do that. How are you, by the way? Jamie Lee, the comedian, is on the show today. And she's got a couple books out. She's got a podcast called Couldn't Help But Wonder, which is available wherever you get podcasts. But it's the 4th of July. I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do. I do know I'm going to be away. It's my second 4th of July in the new place, and I'm a little nostalgic for the ongoing firework activity in my old neighborhood. It's always kind of jarring, exciting, cuz back in Highland Park, the 4th of July, you know, officially starts in mid-June. But kind of goes on year round and then picks up intensity today. And I miss the excitement. There was one year on the 4th of July, I don't know if it was 4th of July or New Year's, where a bullet fell out of the sky and shattered my back windshield. It wasn't shot into the windshield. It was literally a celebratory bullet that was shot into the sky. You're just excited. You know, there are those days where you just got to shoot shit off. And it fell out of the sky into my car and broke my windshield. Could have fallen into a head. You know, and you wouldn't know where it comes from. The bullets do come down, fellas, I'm assuming. I'm sorry. I don't want to be discriminatory or gender specific. People with the guns who get excited and shoot them up into the sky because it's that day. I know you're out at the lake. I get it. But what are you going to do today, folks? What are you going to do on the 4th of July? I hope you have a safe 4th of July. I think I have a confession to make. I'll decide if I'm going to get to it. Because it's a little heavy hearted about it. You have options today. You can reflect on what America and America's independence and freedom means to you, and you know what we have to do in the future to guarantee that, or just you know, be grateful for it, or be angry about the nature of it at this point in time. I got a few emails I need to address, but I'm not going to read them entirely. Just to address the one who seemed to have a tremendous amount of heavy-heartedness about the possibility of me losing hope. I'm not losing hope. I'm filled with hope, but I'm also filled with objective, sort of practical and gut insight about what's happening in the world. But I'm not losing hope. I have a tremendous love of people, despite what you think. And I believe in the good in people, and I believe that I believe in the power of the people and all that. Not losing hope, so don't worry. You know, some days are better than others, but I'm not losing hope. The other one was sort of along those lines. It was a Canadian fan who who tended to sense that occasionally there was a heaviness on the edge of my tone that, you know, he was a depressive guy. And, you know, I know that sensitivity. I have it with my father or my brother where you right when someone says, if you have the sensitivity, if someone says, hey, how you doing? And you can hear it, you're like, hey, how you doing? You know, just there's a little tug to it. There's a little tug to all the sentences, even if they're talking about good things or mundane things or food or whatever. There's just a little bit of a tug. And if you feel that tug, it's an empathetic tug in a way, but it's also just the part of the heart that gets sucked in immediately to someone else's pain if you were brought up in that way. So I cannot say that I don't have that sometimes, but it's not... it's not biological. It's fleeting. It usually might be happening for a reason that I don't feel like talking about, but I'm not living in it, and I appreciate your concern. I understand you feel the tug. I get it. So today, you all right? Where are you at? You in the backyard? You out by the lake? Are you cooking a pie? Are you by yourself just shunning the noise outdoors? Are you not going to go around and drive on the roads because of crazy drunk people possibilities? Yeah, this maybe just a short list of things you should, if you be careful with the grill, all right, you know, maybe the coals are lit, all right? You don't have to spray more fluid on it, even though that's fun. Well, you know what? Go ahead and do it. It's the 4th of July. Just stand back a little bit. It is exciting, and it's a powerful feeling to just watch the fire go up. But you know, be careful with it because you don't want your meat or fish or vegetables or whatever your tofu dogs tasting like lighter fluid. So try to have more fun with the other things that are meant to blow up on today than the coals that you know are probably still lit. And in grilling, you know, don't burn yourself. Don't burn the meat. If a piece falls into the coals, you know, you might want to get it out because it's not a great smell. And people are going to assume that you're burning everything. But enjoy the sausages. Enjoy the burgers. Enjoy the turkey. Enjoy the grilled onion. Grilled onion is nice today. And, you know, figure out how you're going to do the fish. Make sure it's a tight-fleshed fish that can hold up on the grill, or else maybe put it in a little foil, wrap it up with maybe some onion or peppers in there and do it like that, the salmon. Yeah, I'm just trying to help out. Some other pointers. If you're out at the lake, make sure that the water is deep enough, okay? We don't want any spinal injuries or people not surfacing. So before you just go jump off because the guy who lives by the lake did it, make sure you understand what you're getting into so you don't break your bones. Also, maybe a little heads up that fuses in general. Fuses are unpredictable. This applies to both humans and to that thing you're holding in your hand that you're about to light. Don't know how quick that thing's going to go. It can surprise you. All of a sudden, you touch it to the flame. It's like, and all of a sudden, you're missing a pinky. So, be aware of the fuse. Maybe, as my dad used to say, you know, you put the firecracker down, you light it, and you step back. But who can resist, you know, lighting that firecracker in your hand and winging it? Yeah, I mean, you got to wing a few firecrackers. You know what I mean? If you went out of your way to get a brick of Black Cats, you can throw quite a few of them. Or that's the thing. Be careful with the bricks. If you're going to light a brick of Black Cats, you know, not only is that fuse unpredictable, but man, it's pretty exciting because it's like, you know, they're all going to go, but they're also flying around. Like sometimes one of them will pop and it'll send a couple of ones, you know, out into the ether somewhere, right? Maybe on your shoe. And that's lit too. And you don't see it because it's flying. And then there you go. Then you're missing a toe. Not with a Black Cat, but it'll be jarring. For those of you who went out and pursued the slightly illegal, more dangerous explosives, M80s or the bigger, don't light your dynamite too close to where everyone's eating. You know, if you're dealing with sticks of dynamite or small vials of nitroglycerin, you know, make sure you got plenty of distance from you and the family or the boat or whatever. Don't blow up the boat. Don't blow up your family if you're playing with dynamite. I think that's probably not many of my listeners, but there's got to be a couple out there. And you know what? Don't blow up the animals. How about just no hate-based fun this 4th of July. And if you're shooting guns into the air, make sure the bullets, there's an arc to where they're going to go and it's not on my car. Okay? How's that? So that leads me to my confession. You know, there was always bad kids that, or mythological kids you heard who blew up frogs or blew up cats or with M80s. Just horrible, horrible stories. And, I in a more demonic moment, just because, I felt, pulled in by the devil. I tried to blow up a frog when I was a kid with a firecracker. And it wasn't close enough to the frog, but I think I did. I think I blew off a couple of his little fingers, his little web fingers. But I'm happy to report that frog continued to live in my backyard for a few years, and we called him Stubby. And I apologize to him, personally. And now I'm apologizing to you. And I just want to tell kids that if you are compelled to blow up animals or bugs or lizards, make sure you're a psychopath and not somebody with a conscience who's just doing it out of, internal peer pressure, because you got to live with that. You're going to have to live with it for the rest of your life. Stubby, he ended up okay. He was okay, but I knew I'd done something horrible. And it is horrible. Don't blow up the animals. But enjoy, enjoy. God bless America. And, be careful out there. I'm going to keep it easy. I'm going to keep it light. It is a holiday show. I just want you all just be safe, be reflective, understand that there's hope, that America is a great country, and it could be better. You know who I'm talking to, don't you? Yeah, you do. Don't blow up any people this weekend or today. Be careful at the grill. Don't dive in too shallow waters. I'm sorry. Am I being parental? Please don't blow up any animals. Keep your fingers. Be careful with the guns. Don't drink and drive. All right? God bless America. So my guest today is Jamie Lee. She has a podcast called Couldn't Help But Wonder. It's available wherever you get podcasts. She's a also a stand-up and has written a couple books, wedding-related, I believe. And we talked a little while ago, and now you're going to hear us do that. Okay? All right, this is me and Jamie Lee.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
So wait, you didn't hydrate? How far did you run?
I never pay attention to distance.
Come
I
on.
Just
time?
Pay attention to time. Oh. Yeah, and I've gotten really into quote unquote making the treadmill fun by focusing on 30-second increments. So every 30 seconds I do something different.
30 seconds? How does that even work? 30? What do you mean?
It's just to sort of gamify running, because running on a treadmill is inherently boring.
Yeah.
That
to gamify? Is that is that a word?
I think so. It definitely applies here in that, like, if you just go, okay, I'm going to be on the treadmill for 30 minutes, you'll hate it and think about that. You'll just think about the time the whole time.
Right.
But if you're like, every 30 seconds, I have to be focusing on a change that's about to happen, whether it's like raising the ramp on the treadmill or like increasing the speed or decreasing the speed, whatever it is, just mixing it up entire 30 minutes, you don't really think about how long you've been on.
I get it.
Yeah. So it's helped me do cardio, because otherwise I hate doing cardio.
Really?
Yeah.
I hike up a mountain right down the street. You should go hike up the mountain at Bram Park. 40 minutes up.
Are you like right by that mountain though, to where you like getting to the mountain? See, for
me,
my
6 minutes.
My mountain is like a 45-minute walk from my house.
Oh, which mountain?
Griffith Park.
Oh, right.
Yeah, but I could drive there quickly. But if I wanted
to
do a whole walk,
how long did it take you to drive here?
It took me, I don't know, 15 minutes.
So you could go here.
Yeah, maybe I should start coming to...
Don't tell people where I live.
Maybe I should start hiking in a remote location, undisclosed location.
I'm not telling people.
Oh, okay.
They have to figure it out, but I haven't told them.
No, we're actually live from Wisconsin
there
right
now. There you go, Wisconsin. Jamie Lee, what's your real name?
Jamie Amanda Lee.
Are you Jew?
Yeah, on my mom's side.
Just one?
Yeah.
Just one Jew?
Just one Jew.
Hmm.
But my mom grew up in Teaneck, New Jersey.
Yeah, I know where Teaneck, New Jersey is.
Teaneck's interesting because...
Where'd you grow up, though?
I grew up in Dallas, Texas, because my dad's from Texas. Huh. Like, he has lived there his entire life.
Really? How did your cowboy dad meet the Jew?
They went to film school together in London. So my mom she dropped out of college. She went to like a small women's college.
Which one?
I think it was
like Sarah Lawrence before they let men
small,
in?
Small, like it starts with an E. I don't remember. Somewhere in New Jersey.
No, it's kidding.
Endicott.
Oh, wow.
Endicott College.
Yeah.
So she dropped out of Endicott, and very dramatically, she like took a bus in the middle of the night and was like, I'm out. Oh. And then decided she wanted to up and move to London. And
back in the 60s, like?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. So she moved to London, and then my dad also moved to London. They went to the same film school, and then they actually became like photography partners, and they were photographers for ZZ Top. When they got together. Yeah, they like traveled around with ZZ Top. And then
this is what your parents did?
That's what they did initially. And then when I was born.
Like what era of ZZ Top? Early on, before the beards.
Yeah, pre-beards. Yeah.
Like, so when they were a great rock band.
Yeah.
But wait, so they meet in London, they're going to film school.
Yeah.
And then what, they come back to
They went to Texas. My mom moved to Texas
with
my dad.
So your mom fell in love with your dad in London. But mm-hmm. there is this film school, like photography film or motion picture film?
I think it was all of it.
Not
the
clear.
The school was called the London Film School, and I don't know that it still exists.
And they're both photographers?
Not anymore. So they did photography for a while together, and they were partners.
With ZZ Top.
With ZZ Top.
And they had a studio of their own? Did they do like... other things other than ZZ Top?
Not at the time. At the time, they were just traveling around taking pictures.
Of ZZ Top.
Of ZZ Top.
For how long?
I actually don't know. I just know that when my mom got pregnant with me, or maybe right before.
It might have been after a ZZ Top show.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, is my dad one of the beards?
who Billy knows? Gibbons?
I don't really look like my dad, so maybe. So then they moved back to Dallas and decided to be more sort of stationary. And they opened a rock club together called the Hot Club with a K. Club with a K.
This is when you're a baby.
You're
the
really
first kid
little.
Or the only kid?
I'm the only kid.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm.
So then from there, they sort of stayed in Dallas and then they became club owners and concert promoters.
Really?
Yeah. Like, they owned, you actually, I don't know, I feel like who knows, maybe you went to one of their venues at some point if you ever visited Dallas.
Dallas is not a big stop for me.
Okay.
Houston a couple times,
okay.
Austin, I'm going to Dallas now, but so they were part of the rock scene in the 80s?
Yes, 80s and 90s. Really, their business really took off early 90s.
Club owners.
So they owned these two venues. They were right next door to each other. One was called Deep Elm Live, and the other one was called The Bomb Factory. And Deep Elm Live was slightly smaller, so it was interesting who would play it, because the venues weren't that different, but one was slightly smaller.
Yeah.
So like it's interesting because it's like Green Day would play Deep Elm Live, like when Dookie first came out.
Right.
But Sublime or Silverchair played the Bomb Factory, and it's like so interesting because you're like, oh, Green Day became like this massive success, and you know Sublime is as well. But then you're like, oh, Silverchair was kind of like a one-hit wonder over here.
Yeah, what was that hit?
I don't even remember.
I remember the song. I had the record
with the frog on the front.
The frog, yeah.
Yeah,
I had the one song on it.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't remember what it was.
I don't either.
Doesn't matter.
Good song.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I mean, I listened to it a few times.
Yeah.
I wish I could remember what it was. It sounded like other songs of the period.
Yeah, I never got into Silver. I never got into that album, actually. I think I had the album because I got promotional copies of a lot of CDs, so I listened to everything at least once.
So you're growing up there, like, so by the time you're a teenager, your parents have these rock clubs?
Yeah, and they're concert promoters, so they're also doing concerts at other venues around Dallas.
So you're like, you probably got a lot of friends. Who are you like, I can get us into that show. Your
yeah.
Teenage girlfriend.
A lot of users. I had like my best friend Bonnie, who's still one of my best friends.
Yeah.
You know, she was just kind of with me all the time, especially because when you're an only child, and she was an only child as well, you kind of latch on to each other in that sisterhood kind of way.
Really?
Yeah.
Because like I've talked to only children before, and I seem to, every time that I talk to one, I insist that it must have been a lot of pressure not to disappoint your parents, or that they were afraid that that they would lose you, because not obviously any parent would be afraid of losing a child, but for some reason if there's only one, it seems like the fear would be more intense. But no one has agreed with me. It's complete speculation, and every only child has said, no, I didn't feel that at all.
I feel that now.
Now?
Yeah. Like when I'm with my parents, my mom gets so sad when I leave. Like if I go home and then,
well, now
like,
you're married.
I'm there
aren't
for a
they,
week.
Aren't is there pressure? They're like, where are the babies?
Yeah, yes, but they know that I feel the pressure, so I think they've kind of eased up. Like they don't vocalize it a lot. But yeah, being an only child, yeah, you definitely bond with your friends really hard, and they're over at your house all the time.
Oh yeah,
because I think the big thing for me being an only child, the biggest characteristic is like. Like, I really like my space, but I'm also really lonely.
Yeah.
So it's like this constant push-pull. So it's like, everybody out, but also, yeah. Like, I miss you. Like,
right.
It's just, I don't know where that stems from
you
exactly.
You still have that?
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So you're like,
I'm like hyper-independent,
erratic,
but also, I'm hyper-independent, and I love not having plans.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, oh, I don't have plans. Like, I have like constant FOMO, but then once I'm out, I'm like, I want to be home. Like,
oh, really?
It's just up, down, yeah.
Anything that's only childness?
I just attribute it to that because
really?
You're so used to having your own space as a kid.
Do you have other problems like that? How does that manifest itself in other parts of your life? It sounds like, sounds a little kooky.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like really erratic, but it's all internal. I'm not like acting on all of it.
Oh,
I deal with it.
It's going on inside of you.
Oh yeah, it's happening within, but I'm not like tending to all of my whims. I just sense them and then try to quiet them.
So now was like your parents, the rock club owners, like
yeah.
Were they partiers? Was there a party thing in the 80s?
Well,
where, like, did things, was there trouble?
Yeah. So it's interesting because I always like kind of wanted to write about this or do something with this. But basically, my parents were, to me, the most, they were just like the best, most flawless people in
yeah.
so many ways in that, like, they really didn't drink ever. Like, even when we were on vacation, it was, like, a little bit of wine. Not in a self-righteous way.
Right.
Or, like, a
they
preachy way.
Right.
They just were, like, not substance people.
Right.
And they also were very, like, anti-tattoo. And, like, all these things that you would assume, like, rock club parents would be like, yeah, everyone gets tattoos. Go get one.
Were they kind of hippie people? Or
They were
what,
kind
are they,
of...
my age? How?
No, they're older. They were very trusting of me, like but they also were like really strict with curfew and stuff like that. So they were kind of these like model parents, and then there was the underbelly that I kind of learned about later in my life, which was when I was 14, I found out that my dad had been doing some things, some up the nose powder things.
Dad was doing the blow?
Yeah, for like years, but he was so functional, and he took me to school every day. And
well,
like
you're up,
right? But the reason I mean that's true, but also you know what I mean? Like in the 90s,
yeah.
Like especially as a kid, like this is when like Pulp Fiction came out. Like you associate cocaine with death. Like there's no now. It's like okay, there are people who like dabble in it or like you know they've tried
I don't,
it.
Personally,
and they,
I mean, I
don't either.
I associate it with a kind of good time for a couple
right.
hours.
But
and then
in,
a lot
when
of,
you're a kid and
yeah.
you hear drugs,
oh,
especially
you're like,
when you're pushed these like anti-drug campaigns
yeah, yeah.
at school, and you find out your dad's doing it, even if he has a grasp on it,
yeah.
you just are like, oh my god, that's
we're
the most
in trouble. Yeah.
devastating secret my family
how'd
could
you
ever
find out
have.
About that?
One morning, I woke up. It was a Saturday morning,
and
I.
Up.
No, yes, he was up, but I wanted to have a garage sale
yeah.
and I wanted to go put signs up around the neighborhood. So I went into his bedroom at like 7 a.m. And I was like, wake up, we got to go do this. And he was like twitching his neck, like jerking, like he had like a spasm, like literally just like couldn't hold his neck straight. So his head kept jerking back and forth. And I was like, Mom, what's wrong with Dad? And she got very dramatic because clearly this was like their deal breaker that they had. They were like, I now know.
But was
like,
he awake when this was happening?
Yes. Oh, and he was walking down the hall, like putting his shoes on, twitching, getting his keys, twitching.
Weird.
And I told my mom, I was like, well, he can't drive twitching. What's wrong with him?
Yeah.
She's like, you want to know what's wrong? Your father does drugs. And it was such an intense, I wish she had said, all right, the reason it's happening is because this, this, and this. Let's talk to you. Let's like try to explain it to you in a calm way. But it was so, the way she said it was like, our family is ending. You know, it just had this intensity that, that I think that if she had said it more calmly, I probably wouldn't have had the reaction I did. But I was like, oh my God, this is like this horrible thing that I'm learning. And, you know, I was duped for so long. I had no idea that you guys would ever do such a thing. Like, it was just so dramatic. 14.
And did it end the family?
Kind of. I mean, they're still married, but my dad was kicked out of the house. And then when he was let back in, he was sort of relegated to a smaller bedroom down the hall. And he sleeps in a twin bed.
No shit.
Yeah.
Still?
It's really depressing.
Still?
Yeah. And my mom uses his side of the garage as storage now. So he parks in the driveway while she gets the garage.
So. Wait, so this is 20 years later?
Yes.
And it's still going
on? Yeah. Uh-huh. And when I bring it up, my mom will be like, she's like, well, you know, it's just we always were arguing and stuff because of the business. Because, like, they did have this business together. And I do think working together has its own set of issues regardless.
Do they still have the business?
No. The business ended maybe 10, 12 years ago now.
And you went to a lot of concerts, though?
A lot of concerts.
Really?
Yeah. I went to a lot. And my dad...
seats, too, right?
Yeah, although most of them were like rock club standing room situations.
Oh, but I thought they promoted bigger shows.
They did. I went to those also, but the ones that I really like cherished were kind of smaller and grittier.
So, who'd you see that made the big impact?
The best show I ever
saw. Best show you ever saw.
Rancid at this place called Trees, which is a small club that actually has a tree growing up the middle.
I think I've heard of this. Where is it? In Dallas?
In DeBellum, in Dallas.
I've been there.
It's a cool club. And they closed down for a while and then they reopened.
I heard, because I remember that element of it.
Yeah.
Could I have done a comedy show there?
Possibly. It'd be great for comedy.
I think I might have done a comedy show there.
Yeah, it's like small, but then they have a balcony.
You'd think I remember if there's a fucking tree in there.
It's actually a subtle tree. It's like not a thick tree. It's kind of like, it's a little
Because I did flimsy. Some shows where I toured with some guys. Like me and Lucas Melendez and another guy.
Oh, I love Lucas Melendez.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him in a long time.
Me neither.
Kind of had a
so
falling
funny.
Out with him.
Oh.
But it's all right.
Okay.
Not that bad. Okay. He just got drunk and was stupid. And I was like, go fuck yourself.
Oh, no.
But it doesn't diminish his talent.
Quality, yeah.
Yeah. I haven't seen him in a long time. I think he's all right. But yeah, I feel like I might have done a show there. Like I did a few clubs. It was a while back. I somehow avoid Dallas, but I'm going this year. I'm going in a couple months.
That's cool. Where are you going to go?
Hold on.
Addison?
Maybe. What is that?
Majestic Theater.
Oh, maybe. That sounds fancy.
I'm sure there's some new cool venues too.
Majestic.
Gotten into. Oh, good. That's where I saw my first stand-up show ever.
Who was that?
Margaret Cho.
Ah.
It was so good.
When was that? How old were you?
13.
Really?
Yeah.
Someone took you to see Margaret Cho?
My mom did, yeah.
At 13?
Yeah.
That must have been a filthy head full.
It was, but there was something about, it's like me and my mom, it's like two women watching a woman that I don't know, it's like kind of like taking your kid to like a spa or something.
Right.
Steam room.
It sounds like
this is what bodies look like. Like you kind of just
right,
deal.
Right. Well, it sounds like your parents were pretty cool.
They were.
So you're in Dallas, you're just going to school with your only childness?
Yeah, I went to the weirdest school.
Other only child?
Yes, we all went to this school that, it was this really small school near my house. It was actually like a less than 5-minute drive from my house.
Mm.
And now looking back, it was kind of like, it kind of had a homeschool vibe. It wasn't. It was like a real college preparatory school. But the
like
grades,
a homeschool vibe? Like you went to someone else's house to go to school?
Yes. It was a building and there were real classrooms and everything. But yeah. There were only 16 kids in my grade.
How'd they find this school?
I don't know. I guess because it was just in the neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
And they wanted to put me in private school.
Yeah.
And so they did. And
yeah.
It was this teeny little school and like... It was very homegrown. And we, like all my friends who went there, we all look back and we're like, what was that? It's so strange.
Yeah. Because it was just like,
it was just
so
like,
small and weird.
Yeah. And like, yeah, it was just, it was so, I think, yeah, it was just weird that like there were just so few kids.
Yeah.
And so you're all like really, really close, which is great. But
yeah.
Then in high school, I went to, an arts magnet high school called Booker T. Washington.
Oh, so
and so
where...
I went to like a proper school.
What's an arts magnet school?
So the four sort of, they call them clusters, were visual art, theater, music, or dance. And you have to like be accepted in your choice category.
Yeah.
And then you can go, but you don't have to pay tuition.
Oh, so what were you accepted into?
Visual. I went for like painting and drawing. And
you were a painter?
Yeah, not so much painting. Honestly, sculpting was my main thing.
Sculptor?
Yeah, sculpting was my jam.
In high school?
Yeah, I loved it.
Really?
I don't do it at all anymore. Yeah.
That's like,
really
it seems like
it. And I like drawing.
Sculptor.
And I liked printmaking, which I didn't learn until
what
I
kind of sculptures?
There.
Sculpture is hard.
Yeah. I mean, just
hard to
clay.
Appreciate.
I tried to get into like welding a little bit. They teach you that, but
you're welding?
I tried. I don't like fire.
So
in that way, I like kiln fire, not like sparks flying.
So clay,
fire.
Like figurative or just weird,
yeah,
abstract
I love,
shit.
No, like I did like figures, and I did like a bust of a friend's head.
Oh, that's good.
And then, but when I was like 10 years old, I got very into. Do you remember like Fimo clay, like Fimo Sculpey? It's that like colored clay that you can buy
adult
at like
Play-Doh
or whatever. Yeah, adult Play-Doh, and you can bake it. So I was really into like making teeny little figurines in my house,
mm-hmm.
and like super, super detailed. Like I look back at some of the things I made and I'm like, how did I even like shape an eyeball that small?
You were focused.
Like,
you were alone with no friends.
My friends got into the clay with me, which
sure.
is now looking back, I'm like, oh, they probably didn't want to do that.
But you wanted to be a sculptor?
No, that's actually what I learned when I was there. I was like, I am good at this. And like, I felt proud to get into that school.
Right.
Because there were some really, really talented people there. But I guess around my junior year, I was just like, what am I going to do with this? Because they started bringing in recruiters from like, you know, SVA and RISD and all these places. And I was like,
oh, a big art school.
Yeah, they all came to our school. And they like wanted to scoop us all up.
Right.
And I remember just being like, I don't think I want a career in like being commissioned to, not that that's the only way to make money, but I was kind of like, what's the end game here? Like, I just couldn't see it.
Sure.
So then I was like, I think I want to get into acting. So then like at the end of high school, I started doing more like theater and stuff. Yeah.
You're in plays?
Yeah.
And
did you
switch over?
So this is psychotic. So junior year of my time at Arts Magnet, I kind of went through this weird phase where I was like, I'm getting a great arts education, but I feel like I'm slipping behind in academics.
Mm.
And so I ended up going back to the small school that I went to as a kid for just 1 year, my senior year.
What? Oh, they had a high school?
Yes.
That small place?
Kindergarten through 12th. Yeah.
Oh, one of those.
Yeah.
Private weird hippie school.
Exactly.
Mm. So you bailed on the art school because you decided I should probably learn something practical.
Yeah. I think I was feeling, which is so crazy because the education was fine at the Arts Magnet. It's just like there were some moments where I was
was it too much pressure like you had for the, you know, to keep up with the acting or
it was no, it was actually more like I was reading books that I had read in like seventh grade at my other school as a junior. And I was just kind of like, I don't
feel
like...
At the art school?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
like,
okay.
We were reading like, I mean, I don't remember specifically which books, but I just remember there were a couple where I'm like, oh, I read this when I was in middle school. Like, why am I reading this now as a junior in high school?
Right.
So
you went back.
I got really obsessive about that, and I went back for 1 year. And
then you graduated.
It was so dumb.
Why
I look
was it
back.
Dumb? What do you mean?
I don't know. It just feels like a quitter move. It's like just stick it out. It's 1 year, and like this is a great place with great people.
If that's one of your big regrets at this point, you're doing all right.
Thanks.
Like if that's one of the ones where like, oh, fuck,
it is. It is. It makes me feel really good that you're saying that.
Let
it really
it go.
Is. I still think about it. And I'm like,
it's
why
over.
Did I do that?
It's over. It's behind you.
All right. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for the support.
So, like, where does comedy start? Where does that start to happen? Wait,
yeah.
I mean, but wait. So you finished the high school and then you what?
Yeah.
You
then
go
I,
to college?
Yeah, I went to college. I went to University of Texas in Austin.
Oh.
Yeah.
So did you do anything?
I was a theater major and then I switched to TV and film and writing.
So you were a theater major for a minute and then you had
for
the
a
same
minute. My grandmother
the same meltdown?
Shamed me. Yeah, I had a really judgmental grandma and she said to me.
Which one? The Jewish one or
Jewish
the other
one? Yeah.
Where was she in New Jersey?
Yeah, and she was visiting, and she said to me, "What, you're really going to put all of your eggs in the acting basket?" And I was like, "All right." So then I think like 2 weeks later,
that's
I
not
switched.
Quite shaming. That's just fear and probably good advice.
I know, but at the time I was like, "Yeah." I mean, I listened. I was like, "Oh, she's right."
Yeah.
But then it all swung back the other way, and now I want to act, and I do act. So.
but yeah, but it's not like what are you going to get? What? So you went to TV production.
I was studying, I was just kind of circling around the shit that I do now, but never landing on it. Like, I feel like that was what college was. It was kind of like, you're sort of, it's like a puzzle, and then you're kind of starting to assemble the pieces, but they don't actually make a puzzle with a clear image until later.
Yeah.
So, like, I studied animation a little bit, and I studied screenwriting a little bit, but I was still performing on like my campus television. They had a show that was kind of like an entertainment news show that had a comedy slant. So I was
for
like
just
writing
the school?
Yeah, for just the school. So I was like writing like, and it was a live show.
Yeah.
So I was like writing monologues and stuff for that. And
sure.
Like I had my own little, I had something, I don't know, honestly might've been called Jamie's Corner, which is like the most only child name. But I had a segment where I just like talked about entertainment news in a funny way, and I had like, you know, my own 2 minutes.
So you're doing, you're kind of right. So you were kind of learning about the business in a way.
Yeah.
Writing, performing, producing television at a school.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then doing animation randomly just because
animation
I
with
liked
the
drawing.
Fimo clay?
No, I would have loved it because I love
claymation?
Stop frame. I love claymation. I
what kind of animation?
It.
You were drawing?
Yeah. I was doing it like the hard way, like in Flash, where it's like you truly draw every single frame.
But this is just things you could do in college.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just kind of like fucking around, but trying to focus on, trying to land on something that meant something to me.
Yeah.
And then when I graduated college, my first job out of college was working at Comedy Central. I was working in their press department.
In New York?
Mm-hmm.
So wait, so you moved to New York from Texas because you got the job?
Yes. I had interned in the city the summer before when I was still in school, not at Comedy Central. I interned for a magazine.
What magazine?
It was called Jane Magazine.
I remember that one.
It was a
still
great
around?
Magazine. No, it folded. But it was really
good.
It was
sort good. Of a cool
kind of
had
a nylon vibe before nylon.
Yeah.
But I was like in the fashion department. Like I didn't know what the fuck I was. I did know what the fuck I was doing, but I just didn't have the language or the confidence. I just hadn't figured out exactly what I needed to be doing. But then, so it was kind of like whatever. I was like interning in New York and then like, you know, kind of doing some writing at school, but also doing animation, which I don't do anything with now. Like, I was just kind of figuring it out. And then when I had the job
that's
at Comedy...
That's what it's for.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, I did that in college. You try everything you want to do, and you did it, like, once or twice, or you get a sense of it, and that's a good way to use the time if you're not career-driven.
Yeah.
Right? You know, if you're a creative person, do as much creative shit as you can so, you know, at least you know.
But I, like, was career-driven. I just didn't know what that career was.
You were generally ambitious.
But I was also, like, kind of a dork in that, like, I missed Texas, like, football games to work on my animation project. And, like, I always joke that I, like, never did college right. I, like, never blacked out. I had a boyfriend all 4 years.
You missed
kind
Texas
of missed
football.
Yeah,
what
I
do
just
you mean? You're
I
a football
mean,
fan?
No, I wasn't. But like that was the spirit of the school was like go to these things, and like I just kind of was like I'm just kind of like working on my own stuff.
But Austin was kind of a weirdo place wasn't it?
Yeah, it's like this juxtaposition of
you had one boyfriend for 4 years, and then when you moved to New York, you dumped him.
It wasn't a blatant dumping. It was a fizzle. It was like, he's in Austin, I'm in New York. We saw each other a couple times, and then he got a girlfriend, and I was like devastated because he was kind of like my rock.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But
where'd that guy end up?
He lives in New York with his new girlfriend.
The third one or fourth one or whatever?
Yeah, maybe third. Yeah. So, wait, what were we talking about?
So you go to New York and because you interned at the magazine, which was, you know, you're still in the zone of like kind of entertainment and coolness.
Yeah.
And
again,
then you end up Comedy Central. Who are you working for at Comedy Central?
Well, I was working in the press department with Amy Miller and Aileen Boudeau, who I believe is still there. I'm not sure. And then, it was a really—
Not doing comedy though yet.
Not doing comedy, but again, like big comedy fan, watched a lot of comedy in college. Like, I was like, oh, I work at Comedy Central. I didn't even know what publicity was.
What fucking year is this?
This was in 2006.
What?
Yeah.
So you've been doing comedy like 10 minutes?
It doesn't feel like 10 minutes, but I appreciate that you think it's only been 10 minutes. I'm like, it's 2019.
What are you doing here?
No, but I didn't start stand-up right away.
Right.
It's kind of funny. I was the publicist. That feels like a very loaded term for what I actually did. But I was the department assistant, and then I was also sort of given the task of handling publicity for all stand-up in the network, because the main focus at the time when I started was like getting the Dave Chappelle show back on track, and like Daily Show and South Park. Like, there were these big, big things that most publicity energy was sort of given to.
So what did you have to do exactly?
So I actually was at, I think I was at your Comedy Central Presents. I went to all the Presents tapings just to like make sure everything was okay.
Which one? Like the 2006 one?
Yeah.
With the sheep and the politics?
Yeah. The sheep and the politics, yep. And then, I went to like Live at Gotham tapings, Premium Blend.
So you were like the Comedy Central girl.
I was the girl.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I was just like hanging out.
So I probably met you.
Probably.
I'm Jamie from Comedy Central.
Yeah. I try to like not bother people.
Bullshit.
Because I also felt, that time I was just like, you guys were so busy. I was just like, oh, I'll just like sling back. Like, I don't... Uh-huh. What do I do?
You were helping out. Yeah, but what did you do?
Well, on a daily basis, I did a lot of like press mailings. So like if a new show came out, I made sure to like get the advance copies to everybody in the press. And I went to TCAs and
out here?
I think I handled the website.
TCAs out in Pasadena?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
I handled like they redid their website while I was there. So I was
like,
you're
almost like you're going to be a publicist.
It's weird to hear that. I mean, I knew pretty quickly this was not for me.
Yeah.
And I knew that because I felt like I was terrible at my job. Talk about regrets. Uh-huh. That's a big regret of mine. Is like,
another regret.
I was a shitty assistant.
A shitty publicist assistant?
Yeah.
Who gives a fuck?
I know, but I feel bad.
Get over it.
Okay.
You're going to let this stuff go.
Okay.
You know, don't worry about going back to the other school.
Okay.
And, you know, you're a shitty publicist assistant. Well, you know, that's why you're not a publicist now.
I was so selfish.
What do you mean?
Like, I would just sit there and, like, think about my own stuff of, like, what am I going to...
What do you think everyone does at jobs they don't like?
Especially when right out of college. I need to be easier on myself, right?
Why are you so hard on yourself for?
I don't know, because it's just, like, you're responsible for so many people, and, like, I was always getting in trouble, and I was like, I'm just bad at this.
What kind of trouble?
I just felt like I was like, I don't know, I would like fuck up mailings or like, I would like, I remember I always had to like write press releases.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to turn them in on Fridays, and I'd get in Monday and I like hadn't written it, and I would just like throw something together last minute.
So you didn't want to do that.
I know.
So what happened? So how do you like all of a sudden decide, you know, comedy's thing? Because I knew another, you know, Jesse Klein used to be an executive.
That always gave me a lot of comfort. I was like, okay, I'm not the only person who's
that
like
jumped to the other side.
Yeah, exactly.
It's suspect. I've always found it suspect, but you know, Jessie's great. She's done a lot of great stuff, and I don't know why. But you know, when you're coming up and you see somebody who's like, yeah, I'm in publicity, I'm the Comedy Central, and then they're doing stand up, I'm like, it seems like you're cheating. But
I mean, I think, oh man, I'm like, I wish I hadn't worked at Comedy Central. I wish I had worked somewhere else.
Why? Did you get flack for it?
No, it's just like it started to get to a point where, so I had a roommate at the time who was taking improv classes at UCB, and somehow she found a flyer or something for stand-up classes at Caroline's.
Oh, so yeah. Who's teaching that?
Linda Smith.
Oh, she's great.
She's hysterical.
She's great. I started with her in Boston a million years ago. We did comedy in Boston. I think she was doing it when I was in college. So, like, when I did stand-up, like, the first time I was really doing stand-up was, I was still in college. It was, like, the mid-80s. I think she's, yeah, that's where I met her.
Cool.
She's funny, yeah.
Yeah, she's...
Well, she's best friends with Lewis.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right,
and
so, okay.
She's so, like, funny and warm. And
you get the flyer.
Got the flyer.
And you
did
went.
The class. Yeah. Although, it was funny because early on, they told us, don't go to any open mics. Like, it'll crush your soul. You'll wait a long time. Mm-hmm. Don't do it. Only do bringer shows at Caroline's.
Wow.
And I was like, I was like, oh, okay. And then my aunt
was alternative motive there.
Totally. Yeah, but I didn't know that at the time. Right. I didn't know until way later. I was like, oh, that's why they told us not to do open mics. It had nothing to do with like our well-being.
No, they want to sell some drinks.
Exactly.
What about your aunt?
So then my aunt Debbie by marriage, she has a cousin who was doing stand-up at the time in the city, and he invited me to an open mic, probably like two classes into his name's Matt.
Is he still doing it?
A little bit, not really.
Hmm.
But he was like, come do this, I think it was at the Village Lantern, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Some club in the West Village, or yeah, whatever.
Village
bar,
Gate?
Bar with a back room.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
I know where. Yeah. It's
maybe
like
the Lantern.
No, it's like on Bleecker Street.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's
downstairs?
Like, yeah. So he's like, come with me. And I didn't go on until probably 1:30 in the morning, and I had work the next day. And I remember it.
Welcome to the life.
I know. And it didn't. Looking back, I would cringe to watch those 2 minutes, but I was like, oh, that wasn't horrible. I mean, I didn't love it, but I definitely liked it enough to want to do it again.
Yeah.
And then I got kind of like, I don't know. And then I just, I also was DJing at the time. I was DJing with these two friends of mine. We had a group called Fleet Week.
What
is
that?
We just DJed at bars, and we actually were making really good money and getting really consistent gigs at like the Delancey and this place called Lit, which I don't think is there anymore.
So you're like you're dealing with all areas of entertainment,
right? But the DJ thing, I think it came from the same place. I think I knew I wanted to be doing stand up, but I. Was just like, oh, this is another like activity that like gives you attention and like it's at night. But then when I realized I wanted to be doing stand-up, I completely stopped DJing because they're both nighttime jobs.
So did you start hitting the stand-up pretty hard or
what? Yes, behind Linda Smith's back, I was doing a lot of open mics.
Right, so like and you were still working at Comedy Central?
Yes, and it was starting to, I think it was just, it started to feel like a conflict of interest kind of quickly for me.
And like where does it end up? So you're doing like this, the scene that you came up in is different than the one I came up in. So like, you're doing a lot of these open mics, you're writing material, you're doing like the alternative rooms, Brooklyn and that kind of shit?
Yeah, not so much Brooklyn, a lot of East Village.
And really? So who are your contemporaries that I would know?
Mike Lawrence.
Oh yeah, I love Mike.
Dan St. Germain.
Oh yeah.
Mark Norman.
Okay.
Those were my main ones that I saw pretty much every day at open mics, multiple open mics.
Yeah, Dan must have been exciting.
I love Dan.
He's doing all right.
Yeah, but and then I'm trying to think who else. A lot of people
don't.
I love
Mike. Mike's open for me. He used to open for me occasionally. He's very funny.
He's excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, and.
So they were all starting out when you were coming up?
Yeah, so we really like grinded it out together in that I would leave work. This is also how I was a bad assistant. I would like leave work kind of early just to like do the sign up.
Yeah.
Sometimes you could get a friend to sign you up, but a lot of times you're like, they would start to resent you for that. So you're like, I got to actually like be there.
Yeah.
So I would just like do like three open mics in a night.
Yeah.
And then slowly start booked shows.
Like what?
Cabin was a big one for us.
Oh, out in Long Island City?
No.
Oh,
it
no,
was
wait.
In the East Village.
Sean Patton's
show. Yeah. He was like just such a like lovely friend to me when I was starting out.
How's he doing?
He's doing well. I haven't seen him in a while because I think
either.
He lives in New York.
Uh-huh.
But I saw him when I was there, and he's at the Cellar, and yeah, I think he's doing well.
So you're doing Cabin. You're doing, like, did you break
that
in?
Was a big one to get on. I remember being like, oh, I booked Cabin. Like, this is it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how much time did you have at that time?
Probably 10 minutes.
How much time you got now?
Like 10 minutes.
But it's really polished.
It's so different. It's
such
so
a
different.
Tight 10.
No, but now, now. We headlining, baby. We're doing it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You go out there?
Yeah. Well, I had to cancel some dates recently, which
for
I was really
to
bummed
do the podcast?
About. Yeah. I cleared my sketch.
So you're coming up in New York. So you work at this hour now?
Yes.
You broke the scene.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy because I actually, I didn't, so when I was living in New York, the people that I started with, like Mike and everybody, like we weren't in at the Cellar. It was at least, I don't know if Mike would feel this way, but I was like, oh, that's like a distant, that's like a pipe dream. Like, I don't know if
I'll
ever break in there.
Well, it's like a mainstream club. Like, you know, there's definitely a line drawn between whatever the alt scene was and whoever comes out of it, and then eventually breaking into the Cellar, which is still fundamentally a mainstream comedy club. It doesn't indulge much bullshit.
Yeah, and like I moved out here to LA right when my class started getting passed there. So I
why?
Kind of missed this window. I don't know. It was just a timing thing. I just kind of happened. Oh, why did I move out here? I moved out here for a writing job like in 2014. But that was kind of around the time that.
On what?
On the Pete Holmes show.
Oh, you moved out here to do that?
Yes.
Now, okay. So let's wait. But didn't you do some other thing? Some MTV thing?
Yeah. Oh, I was on Girl Code. Yeah.
But that was younger, right?
Girl Code was actually happening concurrently.
To you
much.
Coming up as a stand-up or what?
It was like, I was basically like stand-up. Then I did Last Comic Standing. That was kind of like my first TV thing. I did two episodes of that. I made it to the semifinals.
Oh, that's pretty good.
And that was exciting. And then I started kind of doing colleges.
So you hammer away, you do the open mics, you go on a Cabin, and then you audition for Last Comic?
Correct.
And you and Pete, like, you were dating, right?
We had broken up at that point.
When did you, like, but he's a little older than you?
Yeah, definitely. He, we dated for, like, less than a year.
Yeah, because I can't remember what's public information, what's private information.
No, that's fine. Yeah.
Or what I heard about, like, because I remember you dated for less than a year.
Mm-hmm.
You and
when
Holmes.
I was maybe, like, 2 years
that, that sounds stand-up. That sounds like a lot to me.
Yeah. It's kind of, it's weird because it's like.
I don't want to be mean to Pete, but, like, he's a lot, you know?
Well, also when I, I don't even know how to respond.
You don't have to.
But
I don't talk smack on this show too often. I'm going to let you do it.
Okay. No, but it was, you know, I think it was difficult for me because I was new to stand up and I was so excited to just find people I connected with and like have that sort of feeling like, ooh, we're all family and we all get each other. We don't have to explain each other. To each other. And so I met Pete. He was definitely more seasoned than I was at the time, but still kind of in this, like, we were on shows together.
He's not that much older than you, is he?
Like 5 years.
Yeah, right.
So we were, whatever. So we were just like, we started dating and then it kind of just became clear, like, I need to be doing my thing and he needs to be doing his. But the cool thing is that because we broke up and then he moved to Los Angeles. Yeah. I was still in New York.
Right.
And then we had this project that we had worked on when we were dating. It was a parody of 19 Kids and Counting, that show on TLC, called Kid Farm.
Yeah.
And it ended up getting picked up to like be a web series on Comedy Central.
Yeah.
And so we came back together to work on that together.
Right.
And then it kind of just seamlessly became like, oh, we're like work partners.
We can do that. Yeah.
Like
right.
The relationship was good, but it wasn't the relationship either of us.
Yeah.
And now we're able to just kind of function in a career capacity, which has been great.
That's nice. I can't imagine doing that with any of the women I've dated in my life.
I don't have it with anybody else that I've dated where I'm like, I'm
buds.
Working with them or even buds, really. I mean, it's not tense. It's just like, neither of us are putting in an effort.
And when did Last Comic Standing happen?
That happened around 2000. That was like right after Pete and I broke up, like 2009 or
so. That was like, so that's a big break though. That's when you start doing the work, right?
It felt like a really big break because, yeah, my mom was visiting and I was like, she's like, okay, I'm going to go like walk around Soho while you like do your little audition. She wasn't that patronizing, but it was that vibe of like, yeah, I'm just going to like go try to be on this show. And I did 2 minutes in front of Natasha Leggero and Greg Giraldo and Andy Kindler. They were the judges.
Oh, Greg.
And it was really fun. It was at Gotham. The auditions were at Gotham, which is like kind of, I love that club. I don't know. It's just a
the old
fun.
Gotham or the new Gotham?
The same one.
Yeah. So you didn't know the original one?
No.
Yeah.
Where was that?
Where was it? Maybe 22nd or something. It was a smaller room. I've only done the new one a couple of times. It seems very wide and weird.
It is wide, but when it's good, it's really good. And like they were
the
such
hot room.
Yeah, and they were just such nice judges. Like I think there were some other seasons that were a little more cutthroat, and the energy was kind of like you know, you're gonna win or lose. Like it kind of had that game show energy, but that was not the season I was on. It was very supportive. And
so
cool.
After that, you put together your hour and you started doing the clubs and
started
colleges.
And then like 2 years later was Girl Code. I auditioned for that and got that.
What is that? I've never seen it.
Yeah. So it was a show that was on MTV. It was a Talking Heads show with an all female cast, and we all basically were just doing stand up on TV.
But you did a lot of those. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was 5 seasons.
Jesus.
And it was really, it felt really special.
Union gig?
No. No. But it was like paying my rent and...
In New York.
Yeah, I didn't feel poor anymore.
So you're doing colleges and you do...
I mean, now I would feel poor if that were my salary. Right. But at the time, I was like, killing it.
Right. So you're doing that, you're doing stand-up, and then Pete says, come right on this show.
Yeah.
Now, wasn't there a thing, though, where... You were his girlfriend, but you wanted to play his girlfriend, but you didn't get to?
No.
Or something? No?
Wait, what?
I don't know. I don't.
Oh, wait. You mean Crashing?
Yeah.
Oh, so Crashing... Crashing, the way that happened, so I was writing on Crashing. I was writing on it on the first season. And then second season, they were like, okay, well, there's probably going to be like a girl comedian that Pete hangs out with.
Right.
And I was like, oh, that sounds interesting
like me.
To me.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, I kind of was like pitching myself for it. And they're like, we don't think you're right for it. It's not the right energy we're looking for. And so I was like, okay. And then I kind of just like, whatever, hung back. And I was like, it's not my role. It's fine.
Did you talk to Pete?
Not really.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't like that character was not that relationship was not built on our relationship.
Yeah.
And I make that clear only because it's like the process to get that role was such a process. Like they truly were auditioning every person in comedy, actress, huge names. Like they were doing a full wide search.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I wasn't even allowed, not I don't want to say allowed, but I wasn't being considered to audition for it. And then last minute, Pete was like, oh, yeah, you know, we're going to bring you in. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And by that time, I was content writing on the show and kind of had made peace with the fact that, like, this is just not my part.
Right.
So when I went in, I think that because I was in that headspace, I had a really great audition and had a lot of fun. And then I didn't hear anything for 2 weeks. And I showed up at work because we're still in the writing offices in New York. And everyone was being really weird to me. Like, I don't know. I just like felt it. I was like, what? And I was like, oh my God, it's because I didn't get it. And they feel bad for me.
Oh.
And then.
Who got it?
I texted my manager.
Yeah.
Yeah. I texted my manager and I was just like, I was like, what's going on? I don't like, have you heard anything?
Yeah.
And then it turns out the reason they were being weird is because I got the part.
You got the part.
Yeah, I got the part.
And this, but like, how come I've watched some of them? Like, I know I watched the last season, I think. When you guys are kind of like it's weird, but you guys make up.
Yeah, we're like friends in the last season.
So this was the second season mostly?
The second season.
Yeah. So you got the part.
Yeah, I got the part. It was crazy.
You got to be Pete's girlfriend again.
Oh my God, please don't put it like that.
are you married at that point yet?
Yeah.
You are?
Yeah.
When did you get married?
I got married almost 3 years ago.
And then you're writing a Pete show, you write your wedding book.
Yeah, I wrote a book called Ridiculous, An Unfiltered Guide to Being a Bride.
just being a snarky, you know, take it down a notch the whole...
I mean, yeah, I don't know. Snark, sure. But, like, it was more just that when I was getting married, I felt like all the materials that were available to brides, they were all so... I don't know. They all felt really fake to me, and they all felt really fear-based. It was like, oh, if you don't do X, Y, and Z, your wedding's going to be a failure.
It's just, well, it's just like this habit. There's a whole industry that it has a lot of sway on how it's supposed to go. I mean, I had a big wedding, and I've had a small wedding. Neither of the fucking marriages worked out, so, but I know, you know, I know what both of those are like. I know what a big wedding is like and what the pressure is. So you just needed to make it more accessible and like try to show what's really necessary and what isn't to have a good time.
Yeah. And also like, also just making sure that like people didn't feel alone. Cause I thought that when I was getting married, it was particularly like isolating and alienating that every person was saying to me like, oh my God, this is the most special time of your life. This is the most exciting time of your life. And I was like, why am I fighting with my fiance so much? And like, why do I feel like weird towards like my parents and his parents? And like, I don't know. I was like, things just feel so sad and angry. Uh-huh. And then the more people I talked to were like, yeah, we also felt that, but no one's really talking about that. You're like almost not allowed to. So
is it the best day of your life? It's a fucking nightmare.
I know. I call it your medium day.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not the best day of your life. It's a
stressful.
Nice day, but it's very, it's like a production.
Is he in show business? He's a comic, right? You guys used to do, that's right. You did the
thing
together.
Oh, we have a show together. Yeah.
Still
we do
it?
Monthly show. Yeah. At UCB called Date Night.
And he's a stand up?
Yes.
What's his name again?
He started doing stand up more recently. Yeah. Uh-huh. Dan Black.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
Where'd you meet that guy?
On a podcast.
Oh yeah,
yeah. We were both on a podcast. He was he came on in character,
uh-huh.
and I was just like whatever myself. And his character was very, very funny. And I just kind of had a moment where I was like, "How have I never met this person?"
Yeah,
they're like truly the funniest person.
So now you're a show business couple.
Oh yeah,
how's that going?
Power couple. It's good. I mean, like
what's he doing?
He also has a podcast and he like books a lot of commercials and stuff. So uh-huh. he's like sort of in that UCB acting realm.
Is it good?
Is what good? Being with a performer?
Yeah.
I mean, it's good. It's mostly good, I would say. But I think my big issue with marriage in general is like I've said, my parents have a bizarre marriage.
Yeah, your dad sweeps in a closet.
Yeah, and I just in general I don't really know. It's weird. I have like two extremes in my life. I have like my parents' dad sleeps in a closet, and then I have like my grandparents who had like the most beautiful love until my grandmother died 3 years ago. And then my aunt and uncle have been together since high school and they're super into each other still.
Yeah.
So I kind of don't know what like the gray area looks like. I have two extremes. So I'm always trying to navigate that.
Yeah.
It's good. But I just sometimes I'm like, am I built for this? I don't know. I don't know what's real.
Who does? Who knows what's real?
Trying to figure it out. Yeah, it's interesting.
So but you guys don't, you're not competitive or sort of like?
No, he's super supportive.
That's good.
Yeah. Not competitive. There have been times like when we were getting.
Obviously, you're not going up for the same things, but I just mean in terms of like sometimes when someone's working and someone isn't, it gets a little gnarly.
Yeah, like when he started doing stand-up, I mean, he would admit this too, like, I think, you know, when we first started dating, he wasn't doing stand-up.
Mm.
And that was kind of like, he was like the improv guy and I was a stand-up person. So we had like commonalities in that we're both doing comedy, but we're not doing the same thing and associating with the same people.
Right.
So when he started doing stand-up, I definitely was like, oh, that's like my world.
Yeah.
So it's like an adjustment where it's like, I still like, I have to be supportive and not like weird about it. Like sometimes I get weird because I'm like, it's almost like I'm a baby and I have to take care of the baby. And now it's like, oh, we have a second stand-up baby now that we have to nurture. And it's a lot. Oh, no, your face.
No, it's all right. Yeah, I mean, no, my second wife was a stand-up, but she's not a stand-up anymore. She's gone. So, all right. So you write on Crashing for 3 seasons. You act on 2 of them. The writing experience was good and you know, everything, the relationships all stayed pretty good. Now, I guess they're not picking it up.
They're not.
Was that, did you guys know that was coming?
I didn't. Pete had said something about how he was like, I don't know if we're getting a fourth season. But we actually did a brainstorm room to kind of map out what a fourth season might look like.
Yeah.
And it was really fun. So I was kind of bummed to not be able to carry out that vision.
So it was a surprise.
Yeah, it was. But now I'm like, oh, well, it was really expensive to make. And
you don't know how many people were watching it?
Yeah, I don't have that information.
Do you find that when you go on the road now, people know you from it?
Yes, which I love. And people really loved that character in a way that makes me, it's just nice. Because it's like, you know, it's kind of like, I think about like with your role on GLOW, I'm like, not only is that, I mean, GLOW is like such a phenomenal show just in general, but then it's also like, that's such a cool character you get to play. Like he has depth and like, I don't know, he resonates.
Yeah.
I feel like I was happy that I feel like that was that character.
Connected. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I really do. I'm really like proud to have played her.
Yeah. So now what are you doing? Club dates? Why'd you have to cancel some dates?
Oh, I had like potential. There was like a thing that I don't know. A thing popped up and it was like, oh, you might like book this thing so you can't leave. So that was what happened. So I had to cancel a couple dates, but I'm going to reschedule them.
But what
soon.
Are you doing? You doing like weekends at clubs or are you doing just one-offs?
Yeah, weekends at clubs.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You draw pretty good?
Yeah, it's been really good. Since crashing, it's been, I mean, like Girl Code was helpful, but crashing, I feel like, has been even more helpful. People really like, the people who love that show, like love that show.
What, crashing?
Yeah. Yeah, but I guess that's every show. The people who love it just love it.
What kind of people are they? How do you generalize?
I mean, a lot of them are just comedy fans.
Right.
A lot of them are Pete fans.
Yeah.
And then a lot of them are Judd fans. Like they kind of follow his whole trajectory.
So what happens now, though? Like, you know, so now you get cut loose from a show.
Yeah.
And what are you developing your own stuff? Are you looking for, you are?
Yeah, I have a pilot with Freeform that I wrote.
I don't even know what that is.
It's a network.
Okay.
It used to be ABC Family, but now they're like edgier. Yeah. So
Freeform.
Yeah.
No more families.
No.
Whatever, man.
Fuck the families. Yeah. We're free.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I wrote this script that I was working on for like truly 2.5 years called The Girlfriend, and that's, I'm working on that right now. And then I have a show based
on. You got a development deal with them? Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So they're like, here's some money. We like this idea. Fix it.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. So I had a script, did like two pretty major rewrites, and now I'm waiting to hear about things.
Yeah. And what else were you going to say?
And then, I have a show that I'm developing based on my book.
On the Wedalicious.
Yeah, Wedicules.
Wedicules.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone calls it Wedalicious. That font really fucked me. It
really?
Looks like Wedalicious. Yeah. Everyone says that.
Really?
Like, yeah. Everyone says Wedalicious. And I'm like, it's Wedicules. I mean, it's a fake word regardless. But
right.
Still, I'm like, I should have had a clearer.
So how does that jump to a book, a show? Like it's a weekly thing. You do like one chapter of the book as a sort of out in the world show?
Kind of. I think it's going to be with a streaming service, which I don't think I'm allowed to talk about, but I think it's going to be kind of like a Queer Eye vibe, but for weddings. So it's going to be like funny, but also helpful.
Are you going to be on it?
Yes.
And you're going to bring some other people?
Yeah, I'm going to host it. We've already cast the couples. So we're going to, it'll be an hour long.
Oh, I see. You walk through this shit with the couples.
Exactly. I like help them.
Is there a dude involved for the dude? Do you know what I mean? Like, so you're dealing with a groom and a.
Oh, yes. So mostly bride focused, but yeah, we handle the couple for sure.
Yeah.
Especially if like they're arguing or anything, I want to get in there.
You want to make sure
get in the weeds and.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Make some funny.
Like, what's going on? What's going on, you guys? Yeah.
One of those shows.
Well, I just think that like I was saying, I think that it can get really tense around weddings and I think people feel like a lot of shame. You know, like they're like, oh, well, if we were more solid, we wouldn't be fighting. And it's like, no, the wedding brings that out in people.
I just remember when I got married at the big wedding, you know, it was like a big thing about the food and that like I wanted a certain type of food or wanted them to do it. But what you don't realize, it's like, you know, whatever your special request is, it's just wedding food.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, yeah, they'll accommodate you, but it's not going to be amazing.
No, I always say that like, I think it's great if the food is great at your wedding. That's wonderful. But I think quantity is actually more important because I think when people go to weddings, they there's a sense like your guests kind of feel like they're sort of trapped on a deserted island and they're fending for themselves because they're kind of out of their comfort zone and they don't necessarily know anyone there.
Right.
And you have to stay because if you leave, you're an asshole.
Yeah.
So like you need to make sure your guests are just like very nourished because I think that the worst thing is if like you get a tiny piece of steak and like three little carrots.
And you got a whole another 2-3 hours.
Yeah.
You got to dance.
And it's also like don't give me a lot of food because I require a lot of food. Give me food because I need to like emotionally eat my way through the next 5 hours.
Yeah, this sad event that I'm forced to go to.
Exactly.
I was told, someone told my brother, I don't know where I heard it, that on your wedding day, you should hold hands with your bride or your groom always.
I've heard
this. Right, so you have the same experience and not like separate experiences.
Yeah, I think that's hard. Just hold hands.
The whole time. Where are you?
What? That sounds terrible.
Just like all of it's just sort of like, now we're going to smash the cake in the face. And like, what is it? It's like a fucking charade.
The smashing the cake, I mean, that is a hard no for me. Like, I had spent 4 hours getting my makeup done. No, we fed. We gently fed.
Did you do it? Is he Jewish?
Yes.
Did you do Jew wedding?
Yes.
Why do you say it like
because
that?
Because it was
I guess you're theoretically Jewish.
Yeah, but when you grow up in Texas, it doesn't look the same. At least my experience was not the same. Like I did not grow up with a lot of traditions. My family's not religious. My dad was raised like loosely Baptist.
Yeah.
So to my husband's from Long Island and like
it's real Jew stuff.
Real. Yeah. So
what town?
He's from Roslyn Heights.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so kind of near Nassau County.
How long has it been
in
the
Nassau
marriage?
County. We've been married almost 3 years at the end of this month.
Three.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. The three to four, that's a rough one. Well, if you get through the 3 to 4, you can make it.
Okay. Is that a thing?
It was for me.
Okay. Great.
I didn't make it through three. Either time.
You're doing great. This house is beautiful. You're killing it.
I'm all right.
You're all right.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of things. There's some good things going on. All right, so what are we looking for now from you? What happens?
Ooh.
We're not really promoting anything, are we? We know what you're up to, and you can get the book.
Yeah.
And you can watch you on Crashing.
Yeah.
But that's sadly over.
I have a podcast that's going to be about Sex in the City called Couldn't Help But Wonder, and I'm doing it with my friend Rose Cerno.
What is it about? What does that mean, Sex in the City?
We're going through like the whole series. We're starting from the first episode. And it's like that show was on 20 years ago, so we're kind of discussing like
such a lady.
The cultural
such
relevance.
Such a girl lady.
I am. But like... the like the new version of the
is
girl lady.
Okay. Is it important to you? Are you excited about the Sex in the City
thing? I am. Yeah, I'm really excited.
Because you haven't watched it in 20 years?
Yeah. Well, I've watched it since, but it's fun to like kind of talk about like what parts are still relevant or just kind of how it applies to now.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds good. And you're going to be touring and whatever.
Yeah.
Do you feel good about what's happened here?
I loved it. I did.
I'll talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
That was Jamie Lee. Go listen to her podcast, Couldn't Help But Wonder, available wherever you get your podcasts. Also, all my tour dates are at WTFpod.com/tour. And if you're interested, if the movie Sword of Trust is screening near you, go to SwordOfTrust.com to get the full rundown of where it's playing. It opens next week. I'll be in New York at the 92nd Street Y with Lynn Shelton and my friend Sam Lipsight moderating a Q&A. And it's opening around the country. So go look for those dates, people, will you? So now I believe I will play some distorted nice guitar for you. lives.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.